do.
Let us talk about something contemporary and Jewish, which will make it fit into this class. Let's talk about, actually the truth is, it's not in the slightest contemporary because it's as old as the world, is people having tattoos. Tattoos and body piercing, which we can hopefully deal with in less than an hour, because I need to go off somewhere anyway. There are interesting halachas on this, and not everybody is aware of the halachas. There are quite a few questions that come up all the way through this sugya on different levels. What is tattooing on a Torah level? What is it on a rabbinic level? What is allowed? What isn't allowed? And maybe a few words on body piercing at the end. I'm not sure whether body piercing is getting less common than it was in a few years ago. I'm not quite sure. But tattooing, I think, is getting much more common. When I was a kid, the only people who had tattoos are really rough guys that hung out in really rough bars. Yeah? Nice kind of normal middle class people didn't have tattoos. And that's really changed, because a lot of people have little tattoos on their feet or on their this or on their neck or things like that. I've noticed this around guys and girls. And this is something, therefore, that has changed socially, and we'll have a look at that. So let's pick up some of the sources now. I brought you a little thing at the beginning, what is a tattoo, just in case you've had a very sheltered life and you've never heard of what a tattoo was. You know, it's very interesting, they dig up bodies from cavemen and things like that, and find that they have tattoos. Tattooing something seems to be something which is deeply etched in the human condition. I can't resist that one. In the human civilization, and therefore it survives to this day. Now, the Torah deals with it head on. There is a specific pasuk that deals with tattooing. Let's look at number one. V'serek lenefesh lo yisitnu bifsarchem. You're not allowed to make scratches on your body, on yourself. The question is what's that for? Is that for grief, or is that in mourning? There's a whole culture of course of self. Of harming oneself, of scratching oneself. These days it tends to be associated with certain psychological issues, but of course in certain cultures it's very prominent. In certain Islamic cultures, they put the razor blades on their hands and they smack them on their heads, and that's part of their, you know, whatever they're doing it for, that is part of their religious observance service, and therefore the Torah is specifically coming to Asa to prohibit that. And then it says Uksoves ka'aka Loisitnu bachem, ani Hashem. And let's translate these words. Ksoves ka'aka. Now, ktovet seems very clear, means writing. But what does ka'aka mean? It's a funny word. It always doesn't sound like a Hebrew word. Ka'aka. Yeah? The word tattoo, by the way, is not an English word. I think it's Polynesian in origin. But the word ka'aka is in the Torah. So have a look at Rashi number two. Rashi says, ksoves ka'aka. What does it mean? So ksoves means writing. Ktav, it's writing. Hamukuka, which is etched, ushakua, and deep, she'enu rimchak la'olam, which will never, ever be erased, he says. She'meka'ako b'mechet, because they implant it with a needle, v'hu mashchi la'olam, and it darkens the skin forever. Rashi said a couple of interesting things there. First of all, he talks about writing and piercing. Seems to be a two-stage process. Ksav is the writing, ka'aka. We'll see now what that means. It means some kind of needle, some kind of piercing. But also it says it has to be forever, which is very interesting, because what does forever mean? Does la'olam really mean forever? Like permanently, until the day you die, it'll never fade? Or does it just mean a really long time? Because if it means forever, then what about something that doesn't last forever? What about something that lasts 2 years? Cosmetic makeup, that kind of thing, permanent makeup. You can have tattooed on your eyeliner onto your eyes and things like that. They can do that kind of thing. Henna lasts almost no time. Henna rubs off within a month, a week. What's that?
There's no needle involved.
Henna has two issues, which is there's no needle involved and it doesn't last that long. But let's say permanent makeup, which does have a needle and which does last quite a long time, but doesn't last forever. Is that going to be a problem or not? We'll get to that soon. I'm just throwing up the issues now. What's that? Well, tattoo removal today works in two ways, basically. Either they can, the old days, the only thing they could do to remove your tattoos was literally peel your skin off. Yeah? Which was obviously not very pleasant, probably quite dangerous, and low prone to infection. Today they usually do it through lasers, which apparently is also very painful, but certainly leaves a scar. Or they can tattoo skin pigment colour over the tattoo. Now, of course, that may make your skin look like skin again, but actually it's just like having another tattoo. So you've just had another tattoo to get to override the first tattoo, so obviously halakhically that's just worse, not better. We'll see that there is no halakhic obligation to have a tattoo removed. Having a tattoo is no different in halakha than having eaten pork. Once you ate pork, you never eat pork again. So fine. So then you do tshuva, and that's the end of that. The only difference between pork and a tattoo is that a tattoo is more visible than the fact that you ate pork in 1973. Yeah, and therefore people sometimes don't want to have a tattoo visible on their body. But taking tattoos away, we'll see. This is relevant for people, for example, who have want to have reconstructive surgery of different kinds for burns and things like that, or someone had something cut away for cancer treatment, and they need to have a reconstruction done on their body. They often tattoo pigmentation onto their body to make it look like a normal part of their body, which has obviously an important psychological impact, and it has a medical curative impact. The question is that going to be allowed, or is that not going to be allowed? Because that's tattooing colour, if you like, but it's not tattooing words. I'm raising all these questions now, and we'll answer all these questions soon. Now, Ka'aka says, Rashi, at the end of number 2, Loshen v'huka otam, it's to impale, or to put something deep into him. And he brings various different psukim from Tanakh, v'hukan from Shmuel, it says, toch vin eitz, it's when you thrust a piece of wood, like a stick, a pole, ba'aretz, into the ground, you hang something on it. It means that the word ka'aka he uses from elsewhere in the Tanakh means something which is thrust deep into something. It's very clear from Rashi that the Isser involves two stages. There's a writing stage and there's a piercing stage. Does it matter which order they're in? Now obviously tattooing is always piercing first and then ink afterwards, as far as I'm aware. I don't think they can put ink on the top and push it in. Do you know? I don't think that's how it works. I think you inject and then it puts the needle and then injects some ink in there. So we'll see if it matters which order they're in. But Rashi seems to be talking about writing and then putting in. But we'll see if it matters which way around. Now, what is the reason the Torah asked these things? Of course, the Torah never gives explicit reasons for most mitzvahs, but most of the Meforshim associate this with Avodah Zorah. Have a look at number 3. Says the Chinuch, Mishashia Mitzvah, the root of this mitzvah, the Harchakas Kol Inyanei Avodah Zorah Migufeinu, to remove any elements of Avodah Zorah from our bodies, from what we can see around us, and this also was a minag amongst the non-Jewish people, sign themselves up. They'd write themselves for Avodah Zorah, like, as if to say, you're a slave sold for this Avodah Zorah. So there's like a hashkafic angle as well, which is like for the reason for the mitzvah, just like a slave. In the old days of slavery, they'd often have the name of the master or something written on their slave, on their bodies. So when you put something on your body, it's ke'ilu, it's as if you're saying, this is what I'm now connected to and sold to. So if you want to have I Love Lucy and a big anchor or something like that, then I suppose, you know, you're connected with Lucy. The question is, these days, that people don't do it for Avodah Zorah at all. Is that relevant or is that not relevant? Now, of course, generally speaking, with Ta'amei HaMitzvah, whenever there's a reason for a mitzvah, the reason is never definitive. The reason can be explicatory, that's the word. It can give a possible explanation of the mitzvah, but it's not the underlying rationale for when the mitzvah applies. And therefore, clearly, even in a case which is not a Avodah Zorah, although we'll see there's a machlokas there, that probably will definitely still apply because we paskin. It doesn't have to be for a Avodah Zorah, but there's a hashkafa angle here as well, which is, you know, what are you writing on your skin? What are you really selling yourself into? And the svarno on the psukim makes a nice connection with the bris mila, because the bris mila is a kind of Jewish tattoo. It's not obviously something written, but it's something which is etched into the skin of the person, as if to say, this is my connection. I'm connected to God. And he says, number 4, Kol eile hayu drachim etzlam. These were all ways with the non-Jewish nations. The Haggadah Sasidus, they used to do it to tell the future, for like superstition. Okay, Basura Midarche Ruach Atara, because they remove themselves from the ways of purity, Unavuah, and the ways of prophecy, Ledarche Ruach Atumah, to the ways of the impure spirits, whatever that means.
ubiyos midarche hakel, and from being with God, ukvoido lachalal gufos, and they would desecrate their bodies, asher kiddush la'avdoi, which has been mekadesh to serve God. This is another idea as well, which comes out of this hashgafically, that a person's body is a kli, which houses a neshama. And therefore, as a kli which is designed for kedusha, it's not something that should be defaced or devalued or debased. You know, look how we treat a dead body. Look at how careful we are with a dead body, simply because it used to hold a neshama. I suppose you can learn like almost like a kal v'chomer. If you act that way with a dead body, or the more so with a live body which still holds a neshama, one has to treat it like an object of kedusha, and therefore you wouldn't write "I love Lucy" all over your tefillin, etc. V'chein b'ksoyin kaka. Similarly, with tattooing, he says, let's take ois b'vsarein, and putting a sign on our flesh, milvad ois habris, apart from the sign of the bris milah. So these are just a couple of hashgafic ideas connected to the Avodah Zorah, or the abuse of the human body, the kedusha of the human body, the bris and what that stands for, etc. By the way, the Gemara asks, you know, where is a woman's bris? The Gemara asks, because a bris is so fundamental, how could it be that half the population don't have one? And the Gemara talks about the fact that there's a bris inside a woman, what that means. It's not talking about physical circumcision, it's talking about other things, but it's a very interesting Gemara because it talks about the nature of circumcision and how that relates physically to a male and non-physically to a female. It's a Gemara worth studying because it has something to say on male-female issues at a time, obviously, when there's no apologetics going on, which is very interesting. Now, there are, of course, situations where people have tattoos and they really do want to get them taken away. People often tattoo fairly unsavory things on their body. There's a very interesting tshuva of the Minchas Yitzchak, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of the Eidah Haredis. He was the head of the Eidah Haredis in Yerushalayim. My mind has just gone blank. Minchas Yitzchak was Rav Yitzchak. How could I forget? I'll remember through the share. It's all right, I don't need to pause. It's all right, fine. I'm happy to show people that I'm useless. But no, it's fine. Now his name's bothering me. Anyway, the Minchas Yitzchak has a tshuva that there was a young man who had a tattoo of a naked woman tattooed on his biceps right where his tefillin go. Talk about a Baal Tshuva issue. And the question was, he wants to know, is he allowed to put his tefillin, because you have to put your tefillin directly onto the skin, you can't put them on top of your shirt. Is he, and every time he rolls up his arm, his shawl, it like, you know, it attracts a few raised eyebrows. And is he going to put this tefillin right on, is that appropriate for the tefillin, can he put it on his shirt, and all that kind of stuff. So these kind of shilas come up all the time, and they're not new. We'll go back to the Minchas Yitzchak later and work out what he actually says. Now, let's look at some halacha. I just brought you, just before we get into the halacha, King Jehoiakim, who was one of the bad guys in Tanakh. Most of the kings were, in fairness, part of the bad guy crowd. But King Jehoiakim is singled out for criticism. Interestingly, in the Psukim in Divrei Hayamim, it says, V'yesa Divrei Jehoiakim, the remains of the words of Jehoiakim, V'to Avotav, and the disgusting things, Asher Asa, which he did, which Rashi tells us, Shiba al Imoy, he slept with his mother, yeah? The Hanimta Alav, and which were found on him, which we understand, Rashi says, K'sovis Ka'aka, Heinam K'suvim al Sefer Malchei Israel, they're written in the writings, the chronicles of the kings of Israel, you can find them there. But King Jehoiakim is singled out for someone who did tattoos. That was his kind of disgustingness, whatever, and that's what he did. So tattooing has got a bad press in Jewish thinking for hashgafic reasons, for halachic reasons. Of course, I don't know where the origin of the myth that you're not allowed to be buried in a Jewish cemetery with a tattoo came from, but that's clearly not true. People are buried all the time in Jewish cemeteries with tattoos. It just seems to be one of those things that everybody knows. And it's not correct. So, but nevertheless, it is also to have a tattoo. You just are allowed to get buried in the cemetery with a tattoo. Is it hot in here?
Yeah.
Is the heat on? I think the heat's on, no?
Yeah. I thought I turned it off too, but I'm sure.
Maybe turn the heat off and close the window.
Yeah.
That will keep everybody happy. Okay, let's look at the halacha now. Number 6.
Hakosev Ksovis Kaka, says the Mishnah. Hakosev Ksovis Kaka, Kasa Veloi Kaka, Kaka Veloi Kasev, if you did the writing without the needle, or you did the needle without the writing, says the Gemara, says the Mishnah, Eino Chayav, that's not Chayav, that's not Minatorah, Adshe Yichtav, until you write, Veikaka, and do the needle stuff too. Bidyoi, with ink, or Bechol, or with some kind of dye, Bechol Davashihu Rosham, anything is going to leave a mark. So it's clear from the Mishnah here that if you did either just writing or the scratching, that alone is not prohibited Minatorah. It could be it's Midrabanon, Eino Chayav means it's not Minatorah, but you need to do both in order to be Minatorah, which is what a tattoo really is. But then Rabbi Shimon comes in. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda Mishum. Rabbi Shimon Oimer. So Rabbi Shimon's opinion is, Eino Chayav Achi Yichtav Sham Hashem. You have to write the actual name there, Shenemar, V'Ksovis Kaka Lo Yitinu Lachem Ani Hashem. Why did it say, I am God at the end of the Pasuk? It's because it's only, according to Rabbi Shimon, it's only called a tattoo which is prohibited if you write the name. What is the name? It's not about God's name. Writing God's name on your skin as a tattoo is not what he's talking about. Now, writing God's name on your skin as a tattoo is prohibited because it's a tattoo like any other tattoo. And by the way, it gets you into other problems as well, because writing God's name is fine, although not tattooing it because it's tattooing, but rubbing out God's name is a prohibition min haTorah. And therefore, if you do happen to have Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei tattooed on your skin, which some people do,
yeah,
actually, seems to recall that maybe Britney Spears has that tattooed on her. Something tells me that, but I'm not sure where I got that from. Maybe just one of those things you pick up along the way when you've been to America for a while. But you can check that one out on Google. But if you do have a tattoo of Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, you've got there a shiloh where you can go in the shower
and bathroom, yeah.
And the bathroom and the toilet with the thing open, and whether you can wash it ever. And because, you know, it's like, don't do that. Of all the things to do to upset your mother, that's not the one to do, okay? So don't have a tattoo of a Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. But what is actually, what Rav Shimon's talking about is not the Shem Hashem, but it's the Shem, Avdil Hashem of Avodah Zarah. And the Gemara number 7 clarifies that. Amalei Rav Acha Brei the Rabba, the Rav Ashi. So Rav Acha says to Rav Ashi, At the Yichtav Ani Hashem Mamash, you have to actually write Ani Hashem for it to be a tattoo, according to Rav Shimon. So Amalei Loi says to him, no. Kedatani Bar Kapra, what actually is going on is Eino Chayav Achi Yichtav Shema Avodas Kachavim. It's writing the name of Avodah Zarah, according to Rav Shimon, which is the Isser of tattooing. That's why it says Ani Hashem at the end of the positive, because it's reminding us that Hashem is Hashem and not anyone else. So you basically have two opinions. One opinion is that any kind of tattooing is prohibited, and one opinion, but it has to have a needle and writing, and one has there's just the Shem Avodah Zarah. We pass him very clearly that any tattoo is prohibited, not just an Avodah Zarah. But what is less clear is whether it has to be a letter. What if you tattoo just some pigment? Is that still awesome in our Torah? Or does it actually have to be some kind of a name, some kind of a picture, maybe a diagram or a painting of some kind? What if you just had some pigment tattooed in? And this becomes relevant to interesting halachic shilas that come up with cancer treatment. Because when they do cancer treatment, what they do is they tattoo some pigment around a certain area, like the dotted line or a dot or something, because that has to be where the radiotherapy has to go in. And they obviously can't just draw it on with a marker pen, because it has to be something which is really permanent, because they've got to get it exactly right every single time. So the question is that going to be allowed? Now, obviously, if it's pikuach nefesh, if someone, God forbid, may die, then that was not his talk about. But what is it really pikuach nefesh? They could put a marker pen out every day. Is he going to miss? Is he going to be right? Etc. etc. And you get into a shaila that if it's actually drabonon, not doraisa, to have a pigment, not a letter, and we'll see other issues, then maybe for serious medical needs, which are not pikuach nefesh, that ain't going to be allowed. Normally speaking, rabbinic prohibitions are rabbinic prohibitions. But there is a general principle in halacha that rabbinic prohibitions often do not apply to people who are ill. Not necessarily life-threateningly ill, but even seriously ill, that we may be able to waive this. So one of the things that we're going to try and do, if we are treating these patients, is work out whether it's doraisa tattooing or drabonon tattooing, which may sound very technical, but it could be very important halachically, yes.
Is the picture considered a letter?
Yes. On Hilchos Shabbos as well. Picture is definitely ksiva. Okay. If you draw a smiley face on Shabbos, that is, if it communicates something. The question is, if it's just colour, that's an interesting question.
But it's the flower that's not.
Yeah, there's an interesting question in Hilchos Shabbos, for example, just as an aside. If you write, you know, hello, that's clearly writing on Shabbos. And there's an Issur d'oraisa of writing on Shabbos, and there's an Issur d'oraisa of rubbing out on Shabbos. Two separate Issurim.
If you write like something that communicates an idea, yeah, like this, so that's also considered to be writing, and therefore it's an also to write and it's also to rub it out, min ha-Torah. But what if you just have colour? So there is a prohibition on Shabbos to put colour onto something, but that's a different prohibition to writing. And whereas there is a writing and a non-writing, two malachas, there's a writing and a rubbing out, separate malachas, there's a colouring, but there is no uncolouring. Malacha on Shabbos. There's no malacha to remove colour. And therefore, if something is writing, you can't rub it out. But if something is colour, you can take the colour out. And therefore, that's why you're allowed to take your makeup off on Shabbos. And you're allowed to, in certain instances, want to take your nail varnish off on Shabbos, because there's no prohibition of removing colour. The problems of removing makeup on Shabbos are not removing the colour, they're how you remove the makeup. They often involve squeezing cloths and putting water onto cloths and lotions onto cloths, and they're all side issues. But it's not the colour itself that's the issue. Just thought I'd throw that one in because it's an interesting idea. Yes. I'm not going to get to a Hilchos Shabbos class right now. It's problematic. Okay? Problematic. Yes.
What do they think about like a design? Like there are people that it's not a clear picture. It's not a smiley face. It's not a horse. It's not something. It's just like a.
Well, again, everyone agrees that it's prohibitive. Everyone agrees that it's also. The Shaila is only going to be if we're having to try and fit it into a lower level of Issa to treat somebody who's very sick. But no one's going to turn around and say, oh, well, you only want to have a squiggle on your arm, it's fine to have a tattoo squiggle, as long as you don't have a flower. That's clearly not the case.
But is the design considered worse?
I'm not sure. It depends. If it communicates an idea, then yes, definitely. Hieroglyphics. Are hieroglyphics words? Yeah, of course they are. I mean, you know, you could have a hieroglyphic sign like this, which means like the sea or something like that. I don't know. Anyway, what's that? What about gibberish? Well, no, a letter is a letter. A letter is a letter. And if you speak gibberish, then it probably does communicate something. Right, let's go weiter. Now, the just in case you're interested, number 8. Because I want to go through this quite quickly. Hakosev ksovis karka bivsaroi shel chaveroi shneihim chayvim. If you put a tattoo on somebody else, then both of you did an issur min ha-Torah. So it's not only a prohibition to be tattooed, it's a prohibition to tattoo someone. So a Jew will not be allowed to tattoo another Jew, or even for that matter a non-Jew, I don't think, because there's an issur on the person doing the tattooing. If you're thinking of a new business startup, then I don't think a tattoo parlor is a good thing to do if you're an observant Jew. Sorry, that's your future gone, right? On the other hand, if you do need to have some kind of important medical tattoo procedure which we decide is okay, it's definitely going to be much better to get a non-Jew to do it to you than a Jew, because a non-Jew is not prohibited from making a tattoo on themselves or anyone else. This is a Jewish prohibition, not a non-Jewish prohibition, and therefore that will definitely be preferable to find a doctor who is not Jewish. And we saw when we talked about abortion, actually it was the other way around, right? We talked about abortion.
Yeah.
Abortion?
That yeah.
Sometimes actually they prefer to find a Jewish doctor, because of the way the prohibition of abortion works, it's better to have a Jew doing an abortion than a non-Jew. So it depends. You have to, each halacha is different. Now, there is an interesting debate in the Gemara which talks about there was a certain kind of treatment for wounds, which involved rubbing certain ash into the wound. Okay? And it left a very permanent mark afterwards. And not because you were trying to tattoo, and it wasn't a tattoo in the traditional sense, because it wasn't with a needle, but it did then get under the skin, because when the skin rehealed, it rehealed with this kind of pigmentation under it. And the Gemara wants to know, is that prohibited or not? Is it there's a maris iron issue? And this is going to become relevant to things which are not tattoos, but look like tattoos. Okay? And there are lots of those. I don't know about henna. We'll see about henna in a minute. But they have kind of fake tattoos that look like tattoos. So let's have a look what it says in number 9. Amarav Malkia Amarav Ada Bar Ava. Osamo la Adam Shiit and Afa Makla. You're not allowed to put this special grey ash, Al Gabi Makasa, on your wound. Why? Mipnesha Niriska Ksoviska, because it looks like tattooing. It's a maris iron. Okay? Niriska. Okay. And the Rivan explains. It's only this certain kind of ash. It's very, very hard. It kind of gets into the place of the wound. And you can see it a long time afterwards, but normal dust light will be fine.
So that first opinion says you can't do it because it's marasayin. Rav Bibi Bar Abaya kafid afiru arivda de kusya, the ksilta rather. He was even the tiniest mark, he said, was a problem, Rav Bibi. And then Rav Ashi says, no. Kol makam shiesha maka, as long as you have a wound, makasa mechicha lav, the fact that you have a wound shows that there was no intention to make a tattoo. In other words, which is very interesting, he's less concerned about marasayin because it clearly looks like a wound, and therefore it's not going to be marasayin. So the question is now going to just apply this to modern cases, if you have modern tattoos which really look like, not like tattoos. And I think a henna would probably fall into this category, that even though it's somewhat permanent, it doesn't look like a tattoo. People can tell what it is.
Yeah.
It's a mark that just, you know, it's like a blob on your skin. Or people writing on their hands.
Yeah?
People writing their phone numbers on their hands doesn't look like a tattoo. And there is no prohibition of writing on the hands. It doesn't look like that. We'll see that maybe the Rabbanon of permanent writing, it's mamish permanent, but most of the writing that we do today is not permanent. Fine. So let's just finish off some of these issues, because we asked a lot of questions. Let's look at the halacha. Let's look at the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, and it'll draw some of this together. It says like this. The Rambam paskens in number 10. Ksavis ka'aka ha'amura b'Torah. Tattooing, which is referred to in the Torah. Who? What is that? Okay, she sarit al basaroi, that you make a puncture in your skin. The imale mokam has srita, and you fill in the puncture kachol with dye or dyo or ink or shad tivoinim or other dyes haroshim which leave a mark. The zeh minag ha'okam, this was the minag of idolaters. Shiroshim asma la avodis kachovim, they'd seal themselves or sign themselves up for their avodah zarah, as if to say shehu eved machor la, that they're a slave sold to this. He brings in the kind of the hashkofa behind it, even in the halacha. Mursham la avodah, and they're signed up for that avodah zarah service. Umeisha yirshim be'echol mitvarim haroshim, as soon as you mark with anything that permanently marks. Achashi Yisrut, after you've done a puncture, Be'ezem Okam, in any place, Min Haguf, on your body, Bein Ish, whether you're a man, Bein Ish, whether you're a woman, Loike, you get Malchus, that is an Issa Torah. Kasa B'loi Roshem, but if you write without a puncture, it's the way he understands Kasa to be the puncture. If you puncture without the ink, okay, Betseva, without the ink with the dye, or Shirashem Betseva, or you write with the dye, B'loi Kasa, and you don't, Besritan, you don't make a puncture, potter, then you're exempt. Actually, yichtav yikakeya, until you do both, that's very clear. And it seems from the Meforshim that it doesn't matter which order you do it in. Whether you write, then puncture, or you puncture, then write, that seems to be an isamid oraisa. And that's brought down in Shulchan Aruch in number 11. Ksovitz kaka hainu, what is tattooing? Shisarei tabasarei, you make a puncture in your skin. Mamale mokam hasrita b'chol, and you fill it with ink, or dioy, or shasivonim, or shrim, just like the Rambam. And then he says, mutalitin alfa makla al makasa. He paskens leniently about this ash, and says you're allowed to put that on, because it doesn't look like a tattoo. Okay, Haroshim al Avdo, and then he talks about people who put marks on their Eved, on their slave, and different things like that, which is not really relevant for us today. Now, just to wrap up with one other issue before we go on to a couple of other points. Tosfos in number 13 does say that there is an Issa d'Rabbanon of permanent writing even without puncturing. Have a look at number 13. Ksovitz kaka midoraisa leke isura. On a deraisa level, there is no issa actually yichtav yakakeya until you both write and puncture. Bidyo, bechol, etc. Ketanam b'peri gimel d'machas, as we learned above. Well, Rabbi Shimon, who we don't pass in like, einu chayev afilu kasa v'kaka. He doesn't hold you liable even if you puncture and write actually yichtav shem. That means shem avodah zarah until you write the avodah zarah, which we don't pass in like. Mihu, nevertheless. Isura d'rabbanon ikka, there is still a disa d'rabbanon hache in a case that in a case where you write permanently that afilo afa makla osilitin agabi makaso, because even he brings this issue of the ash, which he says according to some it seems him as well as osmipneshi niruka kesevis kaka, because it looks like a tattoo. The Gemara there in Gittin is talking about writing a get on somebody's hand. The Gemara has all sorts of different permutations and combinations of funny things you could write a get on. I mean, normally speaking, people write a get on a piece of paper or whatever, or a clap or something, but they could write it on an animal. It talks about if you write a get on a cow and, you know, send over the cow. Well, you write it really small. Of course you would.
Just write it as a small. You never see, that, you know, those pictures,
artwork.
Those artwork where the whole of like Tanakh and like, you know, someone's left leg. Yeah. So you can write really, really small. By the way, the mezuzah, the tefillin that they dig up from way back, are tiny. Go to the Israel Museum. They have some tefillin on display there, and you need a magnification to actually read the writing, and they were written 2,000 years ago, so there's obviously expertise in writing very, very small. So he seems to say there's a prohibition on permanent writing, but before I should bring down, that's only if it's really totally permanent, and that won't apply to just writing on your skin. It has to be really permanent. So don't have really permanent writing done, even without a needle. So application, halacha l'maisa, I put it at the bottom. Henna tattoos and temporary tattoos are fine. Although I think if you have a tattoo which really looks like a tattoo and nobody would know it's not a tattoo, then that could be halakhically problematic. You know, you get these sort of transfer tattoos, with kid tattoos, which you and I think they really look like tattoos. Why? People put sparkly butterflies as tattoos?
No, I don't think
that. Nothing sparkly.
Ah, a sparkly.
It's like very sparkly.
So I think, put it this way, the more it really looks like a tattoo, and someone would say, oh wow, you've got a tattoo, the more it looks like a real tattoo, the more problematic it is to be a Maris Ayin issue. When my daughter found, my daughter was very young, she found all these things in like the cornflake packet. You get these things and you kind of rub them on, whatever. And she asked me, she said she wanted to do that. I don't know, she was like 8 or something like that. She thought it was fun. And I said, I felt it was not a good idea. It was not like a chinuch thing to do, you know, to have like pretend to have a tattoo. It's like a funny thing to pretend to be doing averas.
Yeah.
Like it's one of the reasons I'm just, you know, it's like paintballing. I'm not really big on that either. It's like, you know, let's simulate murdering each other for an afternoon. Yeah, although I'm not sure paintballing is osser. I just think it's just it's a funny thing to want to do. It's what?
Like a soy cheeseburger.
No, because it's not Maris Ayin, because no one thinks I'm really murdering somebody. I'm just saying, do you want to play a game which is simulated murder? It's a hashkafic issue. Like, let's say we set up a simulated Avodah Zorah afternoon. or a simulated Giloy Arias. Let's all pretend. Like, you know? But it's not real. It's real. It's fine. It's just entertainment. Like, I don't think that would go well with people, do you? I mean, it would go great with some people, but I don't think it would I don't think it would get rabbinic approval. Yes, exactly. I'm not saying it's wrong to go paintballing. I just think it's a bit funny.
Okay.
Oh yes, you are. When these guys be paintballing, they're Rambo. They are. They're, that's it. They're jumping out of trees, you know, and going, die. You know. Right. Let's. Okay. There are some parents that are very big on not having guns. Okay, weiter. So henna tattoos are fine. Really temporary tattoos that don't look like tattoos are probably fine. But ones that do look like tattoos, I don't think are fine. Permanent makeup is definitely a problem because it is using a needle and it does last a long time. Whether Rashi really means la'olam means mamash la'olam, so that's a good question. But it's certainly prohibited min rabbanon, probably prohibited min haTorah, and therefore it's not allowed. If it's for really serious medical needs to repair scar damage, or people again who are having reconstructive people who had mastectomies have replacements and they tattoo things to make things look authentic. So then there's a shiloh. It's a shiloh and it depends maybe how they're doing it, but obviously there's a very good reason for it to be done there. If there's a serious medical need, then if you can classify it as a rabbinic prohibition somehow, then that's definitely a shiloh to ask. One of the other things that they rely on when they're doing the radiotherapy tattooing is, again, it's a shiloh. You have to ask a shiloh about this if they will ever ask you about it. But it's because they're not doing letters. They're only doing pigment, and therefore maybe that's Rabbanon. If it's Rabbanon, then maybe you can rely on that for a situation where someone's having cancer treatment, even if it's not Pekuach Nefesh directly. You had a question?
No, I was just thinking about eyelashes. But that's
not good. Eyelashes, what, having fake eyelashes put on? Yeah, they stick them on with glue, you know? That's fine. There's eyelashes, that's fine.
Yeah, it's not good.
People have their eyebrows done, like, you know, redone, tattooed and stuff. And people have makeup and eyeliner tattooed.
Yeah,
for sure. Because they don't want to have to do this all the time, yeah? I suppose. But marker stamps on your skin are fine. So if someone stamps something on your hand because you walked in a bar or something like that, or a fairground or whatever, let's not. Yeah, whatever. That's fine. Writing on your skin is definitely fine as well. Over the page, a couple of other things. Having your tattoo removed. There is absolutely no halachic requirement to have a tattoo removed. There have been many girls in Jeshua Rachel with a tattoo. Some very visible. And there is no requirement to have them removed. People might want to do that, for obvious reasons. Rav Oshri, who was a rav who lived through the Holocaust, he wrote a very fascinating and absolutely heart-wrenching book called Responsa from the Holocaust. If you're ever interested in reading something on Tisha B'Av, which is a little bit different about the Holocaust, not just like a historical analysis, but he was asked, he was a young man, he was in his early 30s, I think, even late 20s, he was a big Talmid Chacham, and he was taken off with people, he was in the Lodz ghetto, if I remember rightly, and then he was taken to one of the camps, and he writes down the shilas that he was asked during the war. Unbelievable shilas that he had to pass in, and he had no sforum and he had no access to any kind of material to check with anybody, and it's sometimes not always clear whether the answers he gives is the only way he could answer it. He was very, you know, young man, but the questions he was asked was unbelievable. And Responsa from the Holocaust, and his name is Rabbi Responsa from the Holocaust. His name is Rabbi Oshri, Oshry, Ephraim Oshri, I think. And he survived the war, and he went on to live a long life elsewhere. But he talks about different things. And one thing he talks about after the Holocaust, when there were Holocaust survivors, that said should they get their tattoos, that their numbers removed, he felt strongly that that they should not have that, because it's not a sign of embarrassment, God forbid. It's a sign of, you know, that these people went through enormous mysterious nefesh for the Jewish people, and therefore he felt strongly that they shouldn't have that removed. But it's up to individuals whether they have them removed, as long as they don't have them removed in a way which itself involves more prohibition by having other things tattooed on top of them. As far as I'm aware, laser removal has no halakhic problems. It's just apparently very painful. And you do see, apparently, when you go to the mikveh every now and then, you see people with tattoos, guys that, you know, you would never imagine had tattoos, but especially in places like Arnof, you know, which has some very interesting Balei Tshuva, you know, guys who used to be bikers, you know, in the 70s, but now for the last 40 years have been sitting in Kollel with long white beards. And they're soft, they still used to be bikers, and they have the tattoos to prove it. Okay, fine. So I think the FAQs, we've pretty much dealt with all of them. Only prohibitive idol worship, no, all the time. We talked about that. Fake tattoos, we talked about skin, pen, Shushu Cemetery. We talked about all of these. Fine. So any questions on tattooing before I go on to the next thing? I think that hopefully deals with the issue halachically. But it's important to understand that there is a separate prohibition in the Torah specifically dealing with tattooing, because it was prevalent then, as it is prevalent now. Yes?
I don't know if this is a real question, but it's sort of a
hashgraphic
thing. But like
Weiss. Rav Yitzchak Weiss. Dayan Yitzchak Weiss. That was the minister of Yitzchak.
Oh, the rabbi. Okay, sorry, there's some music. Great.
There you are. I knew it would come in the end.
Like, if someone does, I know I'm going to have to, but like, so, do you think it's just better basically that they cover up? Like,
up to them, it's up to you.
It's just up to you. Like personal
hashtag. Some people don't like to broadcast the fact that they didn't used to lead a religious life. Some people find that perfectly fine about it. Whatever.
It's
not Maris Ayin, it's a tattoo.
It gives the impression that it's okay for Jews to have tattoos, or
No. Maris Ayin is not that it gives the impression that it's okay for someone else to do it. That's not Maris Ayin. Yes, it invites somebody to think that you're doing something wrong when you didn't do something wrong. In this particular... Yes, that's all. Maris Ayin is when I'm not doing anything wrong, but someone sees me doing something which actually looks as though I am doing something wrong. If I am doing it wrong, it's obviously not Maris Ayin. I'm doing it wrong. So this person who had a tattoo is no Maris Ayin because they had a tattoo. Correct. So you want to say that walking around with a tattoo makes you, I don't know, is that really, if you're an obviously religious person and you walk around with, you know, something, I Love Lucy, on your hand, is anyone really going to think that you did that? That's an interesting question.
I think also, especially in today's day and age, and maybe it depends on your community as well, like if you're in a community where like, pretty much everyone's like from birth,
Right.
Would be more of an issue.
I don't know. I had this shine a little bit differently when I used to be a lawyer and I used to eat in trade places because, you know, I was client entertaining and I, you know, I sat there eating a piece of cucumber and pushing a half a tomato around my plate and all that kind of stuff. And I did so, there were no kosher restaurants and client entertainment was fundamental. I used to do it all the time, at least once a week. Yeah? So what used to happen is I just used to end up eating almost nothing and drinking loads of gin and tonics because that's what they did. Except everyone else was eating and drinking and I was just drinking and drinking and it was really quite difficult. And that was one of the hardest things to balance, actually, being a lawyer. What were people ask me, what were the challenges of being a religious lawyer? You know, the answer is too much gin and tonic. But what used to happen is I used to sit in these trafe restaurants, like rabbits hanging on the walls and all that kind of stuff. And I asked the Shiloh, should I wear a kippah when I'm there or should I not wear a kippah when I'm there? And the answer was very clearly, you definitely should wear a kippah when you're there. Because if there were any Maris Ayin there, oh my goodness, Manning doesn't keep kosher. There's no way that Manning doesn't keep kosher and also wears his black kippah in the when he's eating tray.
Yeah.
It's like there's obviously going to be another explanation. It's like one of my friends who's a rabbi had to drive on Yom Kippur, drive his wife to the hospital.
Right.
Yeah? So was he going to kind of sneak out? Is it better he should wear jeans, like, and sneak out? Or should he wear his yontzef clothes and drive down the road, you know, waving at everybody? Yeah? And he clearly concluded the latter, and that's just what he did. He drove down the street and Yom Kippur went, waving at his congregation as he went past. And obviously there's no Maris Ayin there. The more blatant it is. So I don't know whether there's Maris Ayin for a religious person to have a tattoo. On the contrary, in this day and age when there's so many people who became more religious, I just think that's what people would say. I don't know, it depends on you. It's your choice then. It's totally your choice. Now, body piercing. Body piercing, unlike tattooing, is not prohibited specifically in the Torah. There is nowhere in the Torah where it says you're not allowed to pierce your body to put a piece of jewellery in it. It says you're not allowed to scratch your body to damage it. But that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about piercing your body and putting things in because you think they look nice or because you think you want them for whatever constructive reason. Therefore, in order to find something wrong with body piercing, and clearly there comes a point when there is something wrong with body piercing, it's a bit more difficult to actually pin that down. No pun intended there at all. But that really wasn't intended. The prohibitions I would suggest, which the poskim talk about, are the following. There is a prohibition of Baal Tashaksu, which is not one that comes up often in class, and therefore I thought it was useful to raise it. Look in Posuk number 14. Al Tashaksu es nafshoi seichem. Don't do something disgusting to yourselves, says the Posuk. B'chol asheret asheret, so any creepy crawlies, the context of this is eating like, you know, creepy crawlies in a way which is disgusting. B'loi titamu behem, don't become impure through them, then it's meisim bam, and you'll bring tumah into yourselves, whatever. The Chazal learnt out from this, there is a prohibition called Baal Tashaksu, which is to do anything which is disgusting. And now the question is, what is disgusting? And it's very hard to actually define objectively what is disgusting. One of the things that Chazal identified as Baal Tashaksu is not going to the bathroom when you need to. That's why we give quite a lot of halachic weight to the idea of going to the bathroom when you need to go to the bathroom and not holding on when you really need to go to the bathroom. That's an issue of Baal Tashaksu. In addition to other issues that you're not allowed to learn Torah or tea or daven or things like that when you need to use the bathroom, there is a Baal Tashaksu. At what point is having piercings going to be Baal Tashaksu? And I'm not sure there's an easy answer to that question. Obviously someone has their ear pierced. That's common and standard. Someone who has a couple of piercings in their ear, okay. What about a little nose piercing? You know, what about someone who has like studs through every single visible part of their head? So, I don't know exactly where you draw that line. It is a little bit, or if not very much, societal. And since Chazal didn't identify body piercing as an objective Baal Tashaksu, I think it's going to be difficult to draw that line. I think it's going to be one of these things that you kind of know when the line is crossed, usually. It's usually clear. But sometimes they're going to be grey areas. And I don't think anyone's going to be able to turn around to you and say, having your nose pierced is Baal Tashaksu, it's disgusting. Especially in a society where it's quite common. And in some societies, you know, in the world, like in India or whatever, it's extremely common for women. It may even be more common than having their ears pierced. I'm not sure. I haven't made a study of
and Indian piercing, you know, rituals. But having a nose piercing, loads of people seem to have that. So I'm not sure you define it as Vatshaksu, having your tongue studied through and all that kind of stuff.
I think for men it's less common.
Right, it's far less common, which really brings us up onto the next page. So Vatshaksu's out there, and I think someone who has, you know, every single bit of their tongue with studs coming out of it, I think there's a danger that you're going to be certainly prohibited under that. Begid Isha, of course, is a problem. You raised this problem. I put it as number three. For men, there is clearly a prohibition on having any kind of dress which is feminine or effeminate. That doesn't just include clothing. The halakha is very clear. It includes any kind of personal body grooming, removal of body hair and jewellery and all that kind of stuff. But again, it's extremely subjective. We talked about this before in another context. I can't remember what. Maybe it was the sex change here that we had.
Yeah.
But it's kind of something else. It's very subjective. You know, in a society where men wear earrings, you could imagine a society where men do wear earrings and women don't. I don't know if you're a pirate or something. You know? But... You know, or in Africa, I don't know, in a society where the men all wear earrings, clearly there's no problem with Begid Isha. The question is whether men do wear earrings or men don't, and that's going to change with time. In our society, I don't think earrings are standard with men in most societies, so I think that's changing. Certain jewellery is.
I think plenty of men wear earrings, not that many. I think it's more like right now, maybe a social issue.
I think it's going to depend on what Jewish society does, not what non-Jewish society does. And Jewish society, I suppose, who you're going to define within Jewish society? All Jewish people, religious Jewish people, part religious Jewish people? It's going to be an interesting question. Certainly, jewellery has changed with time. There are times in history where men wore lots of jewellery. Certain cultures were still today where men drip with jewellery, and it's considered to be very masculine to have chains and things all over you. Yeah, and some cultures in which it's considered to be ever so really yuck. Yeah, and it really depends on your culture, and therefore wearing a wedding band or something like that. You know, depending on your culture, it's fine. But here, having your ears or nose pierced, I think still for most men, would be considered to be Begid Isha, and therefore that would be an issue. Although I'm not definitely saying for sure, it really depends on the Shaila. Let's talk about Tzniut. Tzniut is, of all of the issues, the most subjective of all of them, and it really depends on what's considered to be acceptable. The way that Hilchos Tzniut is set up in Halacha is to leave it to individual societies to define what is tanua and what is not tanua. That's the concept that the Gemara calls dat yehudit. Dat yehudit means that the Gemara has specifically said that the local population have to decide what is and what isn't acceptable. Within certain boundaries, there's dat moshe, where there's an actual Torah prohibition to do something, I don't know, like a married woman covering her hair. That's clear, that's not a societal issue. But where most of the sneers issues that we talk about in sneers terms today are dat yehudit issues. And therefore, they will be very dependent on that society. And it's not geographical, it's really societal, if you're a part of this society or that society. And that, therefore, is going to depend. You know, if you're part of Beis Yaakov, so then you can have one ear piercing and right there or whatever, or right. And other societies, it depends. You know, it really depends. And I don't know if there's no right or wrong answer. I know that there are people who, in different societies, from societies, have a two piercing, three piercing. I'm not prepared to get into it because it's so dependent on the society, then it'll be defined by that. But certainly I don't think it's possible to sit around and say it's not sanua to have this, or it's not. It depends on where you're from or what society you're connected with. There are issues I put here in six of mikveh, which just the practical issues, which even if you decide that these things are perfectly acceptable for whatever reason, you have to take them all out when you go to the mikveh, and it becomes a real kind of faff to do that. Because you can't go to the mikveh with anything in. Earrings, nose rings, and all that kind of stuff.
You can go with like a necklace on. Or
I know, but it's one thing taking off a necklace. It's another thing to, I don't know how easy or hard it is to take out a nose stud.
Oh,
or a belly ring or something like that. I mean, it could be like... Easy?
No.
Well,
I
oh, okay, fine. Well, there you have it. So, but I'm just saying it's just a practical issue. I've certainly known girls at Midrash Rachel that have had these things and they'd given them up when they got married and sort of said, oh, what happened all of a sudden? And they said, oh, I just couldn't be bothered anymore. It was just such a fiddle. Let's take it in and take it out, take it in, take it out. You know, that kind of stuff. That's definitely an issue. The other issues I wanted to just raise here was Chukat HaGoy. Chukat HaGoy is another very slippery customer. there is a prohibition in the Torah. Have a look at number 15. Kamasa Eretz Mitzrayim Asher Yishavtem Ba Lo Tasu. Don't copy the Egyptians, what they used to do. Kamasa Eretz Kanaan Asher Ani Meviyeschem Shama Lo Tasu. Don't copy the Canaanites and what they're about to do. Yeah, what they do. Ubechukoseihim Lo Seilechu. Don't follow their chukim. Don't follow the chukim of the non-Jews. What does that mean, the chukim of the non-Jews? Now, there are those authorities that say it has to be a religious thing, a religious form of practice or ritual or dress. Jews shouldn't dress like that, maybe wearing like a dog collar or having like a priest haircut, like a monk haircut, something like that. But there are others, and the Rambam actually is quite harif on this. The Rambam is quite stark. Look in number 16 in Halacha. Ein holchi mechukas oivdei kochavim. He says, the Rambam, you're not allowed to follow the customs of the non-Jews. The loy medamim lehem. Don't try to copy them. Loy bemalbush, not in the way you dress. The loy beseyar, or not in the way you have your hair. Or kiyotamim, or anything like that. Sheneemar, loy seileichu, bechukas hagoyim. Loy seileichu, bechukas hagoyim. Veneemar, bechukas eichem, loy seileichu. All these psukim. Eleyir Yisrael muvdal mehem. He goes one stage further. Jews must look different, he says. V'yadua b'bal shua, a Jew must be recognizable from their dress. U'b'shah masav, and from the way they act. K'moshu hu muvdal mehem b'midasoye b'dasem. Just like they are understandable b'mada'o in their opinions, and their midas, and the way they behave, the way you think. The way a Jew looks has to be different. V'chein hu oimer v'avdil eschem in ha'amin. God says, I will separate you from the nations. Therefore, never wear clothes that are specifically non-Jewish clothes, he says. Don't grow the corners of your hair. I'm like, they'll have like things hanging down from their hair. And he's talking about dreadlocks and things like that. Well, I'll tell you in a minute whether this is halachically binding or not. Ponytails, people get ever so upset about ponytails in some parts of the world. Like, ponytails drive people wild. Yeah, in terms of halacha and men having ponytails. Yeah, men having ponytails. Yeah, okay, not women having ponytails. V'loy yigaleach min atzadim, don't have your hair shaved at the sides like a Mohican, we'd call it today. V'yanir chaseah be'emsa, and leave it just down the middle in like a Mohican, mohawk, yeah. K'mo sheheim oisin, v'zen nikra bluris, that's called the bluris. Don't have like, you know how some of these guys have these like shaved kind of designs on their heads, all that kind of stuff. He's talking about that, and he says you can't do that. Now, it's an interesting Rambam. So what does he mean? By the way, the Hasidim, when they dress the way they dress, they are basing the way they dress on this Rambam. And when you say to them, you know, why do you have to look so Jewish? You know, why can't you just wear like normal clothes and be Jewish? They will tell you, well, excuse me, we're just following the shita of the Rambam, which is that a Jew must look like a Jew. Whatever the non-Jews look like, the Jew has to look different. So even though the Hasidim walk around in the dress clothes of a Polish nobleman from 1800 or whatever, or 1700, the fact is that Polish noblemen don't dress that way anymore. It will be an interesting question if everybody in the world suddenly caught on and started dressing up like Hasidim with a shtreimel and a long black coat. Would the Hasidim be allowed to still dress that way? Or would they have to start wearing jeans and sneakers? It's a half in Jeff's question, but it's a half not. Because they say that they're doing it because of this Rambam. The question is, what does this mean? What is a non-Jewish way of dressing? So non-Jewish people wear ties. Are you allowed to wear a tie? Chassidim will say no. They will not wear ties. They won't. They say this is a non-Jewish dress. What about shoes?
What do you mean?
Are there certain shoes that are non-Jewish types of shoes? Again, the Hasidim wear special shoes. They don't wear normal shoes. They wear, there's Hasidish shoes. They look quite different. If you look at them close up, they often don't have laces and they're designed in a certain way. They go with a whole Polish, you know, kit. But what does that mean? You're not allowed to wear a pair of sneakers? What about a jacket? Is a jacket osa? By the way, men didn't used to wear jackets. It was considered, until 150 or so years ago, very not sanua for a man to walk around in a jacket.
What did they wear?
Long coats. Because how can you walk around in a piece of clothing as a man which exposes your whole front? Pants and a short jacket was considered to be extremely not sanua. Which is interesting how that changed. Today you would never think about it. You'd never think, would you even think such a thing?
No.
And it shows you how society is, like, norms have changed. But now you wouldn't have think a guy walking around in a jacket and pants is in the slightest inappropriate. 200 years ago it would have been considered to be very gauche to do such a thing, because it's like, you know, on show to the whole world. That's why the Yekkers, the German Jews who started wearing short jackets, got called Yekkers. Yekkers is from a Yekka, means a jacket.
Yeah? The yekkers are yekkers because they're called jackets. Yeah? That's what yekker means. Yeah? As far as I'm aware, that's what he means. And therefore, they were considered to be extremely, you know, how can they wear such a thing? But times change, you know? So I don't know exactly how far chukat ha'goy goes in terms of body piercing, but I would go so far as to say that if you, sometimes body piercing is definitely part of a kind of subculture. It's not just a thing that you do in your ears, it's a cultural association. And once you're pierced, once a person's piercing becomes part of that piercing culture, then I think that definitely you're definitely drifting into this chukat ha'goy world, which is part of a whole different culture. I think that's what he's talking about now. We don't usually take this Rambam to the point that a Jew, most people other than Hasidim, don't say the Jews have to wear dafka different clothes. But there are some things which are chukat ha'goy, which are still problematic. Although it's very interesting, the English rabbinate, go back 100 years, Orthodox English rabbis used to wear vicar clothes with a dog collar, with a white dog collar and black canonicals.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you see pictures of these guys from Orthodox shuls from 100 years ago. They look like the local vicar.
Why?
Because that's how men of religion dressed. Now, is that chukat ha'goy?
Yeah.
And most people would probably think it was, because you're dressing up like a vicar. You know? But they obviously felt it wasn't chukat ha'goy. I can't believe they were just all doing it in gross violation of the Issa D'oraisa. Yeah, this is what doctors look like. This is what rabbis look like. People were more formal in those days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, rabbis had to look like this, and doctors had to look like that. And nowadays, things, yeah, it's much more of an anything goes. The last few issues, obviously health issues are relevant. To do something which is dangerous is always going to be a problem. The question is what's dangerous and what's not dangerous. And maybe I'll say a word on that. That's an interesting halakhic issue as well. Taking risks in halacha is prohibited unless it's something standard that normal people do. Even if it's something which is a higher level risk, but it's something which normal people do. And the Gemara discusses this in the context of people, women getting pregnant where it may be dangerous for them to get pregnant, for different medical reasons. And the Gemara discusses, should they take contraception? Because, you know, it's a risk, and if you get pregnant, then that could be dangerous in specific circumstances. Or should they say, you know something, have bitochen and shone pesayim Hashem. This is a normal risk that people take, and there's a possibility that God looks after the simple, and maybe this is just a risk that we take. And this finds its way into halacha in a number of areas. For example, are you allowed to, you know, go on an aeroplane? It's a risk. The answer is, it's a standard risk that people take, and actually it's a lot less risky than going in a car. Okay, are you allowed to go skydiving? So the answer is probably not, because it is a risk, and you might come out and say, yeah, but Rabbi, skydiving is less dangerous than walking across Camp Ben Sharim, which I can absolutely believe if it is. Yeah, absolutely, it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. But walking across Camp Ben Sharim is a standard societal risk that people carry in order to live their lives, whereas skydiving is not. You're going to do it to raise $15,000 for cancer research? That's a good shyla. I don't know how much money you have to use raise in order to become acceptable. But basically, it doesn't seem to be acceptable. Where do you draw the line? What about skiing?
People
go skiing. Normal people go skiing. What about ATVing? What about bungee jumping?
Jumping
on the couch? Do you do that a lot? Your secret's out there.
I know someone who got paralyzed.
Jumping on the couch? A grown-up person?
He fell instead of forwards, he fell backwards.
Absolutely. You know, don't jump on the couch, all right? You heard it here. Don't jump on the couch. But it's a good shyla. I know a guy who went turned over in one of these ATV things, and he was also paralyzed from the neck down. And, you know, does that mean you shouldn't do them? That's a good question.
No.
Okay, fine. If you're, don't, I don't think you have to stop your kids jumping on the couch. They kind of bounce more easily. But anyway, the first time my wife and I ever went babysitting, we were just married, we agreed to babysit the neighbour's kids.
Aww.
Yeah? And I'm sure she'd been babysitting before, I'd never been babysitting. And they had like this 2-year-old was bouncing, and she bounced really, she just flipped right over the couch, right behind her. Like, she gashed the side of her head open. Like, there's blood everywhere.
Oh my goodness,
it was like this awful experience. You have to call these people out and say, everything's okay, but, you know, but what's her name? Is now bleeding on the floor. And she, the same thing is like, is she concussed? You look in her eyes, you know. No, we patched her up, it was alright. She's now, blood goes
like. Would stitches be like with the sew?
With a, no, because no one's writing when they're putting the stitches. It's just putting needles in to stitch you up. Right. Now, therefore, that I think is, and also the last thing, respect to the human body, we taught this a little bit, the Tselem Elokim, the idea that a human body is housing a Tselem Elokim, and therefore has to be respected and honoured rather than disrespected and abused. That's definitely an important hashkafic issue as well. So is it allowed, are you allowed to have body piercing? Well, I think you have to kind of make your own mind up and ask a shaila, because it's not clear. I mean, it depends on what, depends on who, depends on where, depends on how, depends on a load of different things. But you can't have a tattoo. Yes.
This is a little maybe weird question, but